All right, Payne and Pendergast with you what is today? I'm losing track. Wednesday. It's Wednesday. Payne and Pendergast, but playing the part of Seth Payne is John Harris for today. We're just having trouble connecting to Seth technically today, so that'll get remedied for tomorrow. But in the meantime, Texans radio, Texan sideline reporter, my first ever radio brother.
Yeah, how about that?
Johnny Harris joining me out here. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I saw Seth's tweet, and I was like, you know, I'm just hanging in studio. I was literally about to watch Reuben Bain Jr. from the University of Miami start, you know, my early scouting that I've been getting done. And I saw Seth's tweet. I was like, you know what? I'm 2 minutes away, man. I can just walk right on out and just, you know, start chopping it up. So, you know, let's go.
Let's go. Yeah,
it's always,
yeah.
It's always good when I, you know, sit next to you.
Yep.
You know, done this for a long time. So it's good. Good day. It'll be hot as hell. But day 7 of training camp coming up, so it's going to be good.
Okay, so before we get into I teased that ESPN article from yesterday that is all good news for the Texans when it comes to their young core. I don't know if you saw that, ranking that. We'll get I want to get your thoughts on that, obviously, in a minute. But as long as we've got you here, and obviously you and Mark will be chopping it up from 8 to 10 a.m. today, as you guys always do. I thought yesterday was a good day for the offense.
Absolutely.
Out here.
Totally.
What did you think? What did you like? What did you like of what you saw yesterday? What were the key things offensively? Because it's been, by and large, a defensive camp so far, but I thought yesterday might have been the best day the offense has had.
Well, I felt really good about what the offense is doing yesterday, and then it was confirmed after practice because I saw a few of the defensive personalities, players, coaches, staff, and they seemed to be a little bit disgruntled about things. So
good.
I was like, okay,
yeah,
all right, good.
All right.
I feel good.
You've had your moments.
Yeah, so I felt good about that. You know, it was interesting. I thought, you know, 7-on-7 was kind of the first group drill that they did, and I think it was the second or maybe the first throw. Caleb Block came up with another interception. You're like, God dang.
Yeah.
This dude is just all over the place. And it was like the next play was just a CJ throw to Kirk, I think just out in the flat. But from that point on, it felt like that kind of broke the seal and the offense really kind of got it going. There was a great play by Sting and Petrie over here on Higgins that knocked the ball away. But after that, the receivers that made plays, you know, Kirk had a deep over route, you know, beating the nickel across the field, which is great. And it just had flashbacks to 23 when Kirk was doing that to Tavier Thomas in the building. In that big game against Jacksonville. And it was like, I keep seeing Tavier Thomas on Christian Kirk, and I know that ain't good. And so seeing Kirk do that, what he did to us in 23, was just awesome. But Xavier Hutchinson had a one-hand catch on the sideline, which was awesome. You had Jaden Higgins, who came back later in practice and mossed somebody. I don't know who. He went up over somebody on our sideline.
It was right in front of us.
Yeah,
he got his feet down, and he kept the ball to the ground. It was great.
It was unbelievable. Those guys made catches. I feel like all the quarterbacks threw the ball exceptionally well. Now, Keaton didn't have as many chances, but my guest after practice today is going to be Graham Mertz. I'm really excited to talk to Graham because he's been throwing it really well.
He has.
I mean, really, really well. He's been very accurate. He's thrown the right ball. I had a buddy of mine. We were talking about this last year, and he's like, you know, three types of balls. One ball, which is a laser. The three ball is kind of the deep ball, the big parabola. And the two ball, which is the hardest one to be accurate with and be good with, which I think CJ's great with, the two ball. Graham's been throwing that two ball well. He's been throwing the ball in a cover two hole really well. Justin Watson, I thought, had a really good day. But I feel like Davis Mills is throwing the ball, and I told him this in the hallway. I said, I've been here 5 years, and I don't know I've seen you throw it better.
This is the best he's looked since he's been here.
And what's interesting, Sean, because in OTAs and minicamp, Mark and I looked at each other a few times. We're like, what's wrong with Davis? Like, what's going on with him, man? He should be throwing it better. He came out here for training camp, and it was like from first throw through yesterday, he has been diamond people. I mean, all kinds of throws, touch throws. He had a touch throw over the weekend to Brevin. When the offense couldn't really do anything, he hit that touch throw to Brevin. He's made a couple of nice throws. But then Seven had a couple of throws yesterday that were like, okay, those are the ones we remember. The best one, I thought, he had Dalton Schultz kind of down the seam. And Dalton does a really good job of understanding body position. I know Dalton takes, you know, crap for, you know, he's not the fastest guy. He's not the greatest blocker. But he's extremely smart, especially in a pass game. And he did a great job of kind of widening Sting with his route, and he kind of broke it back in just slightly. and there was a spot about the size of a big purse, maybe.
Okay.
That CJ could throw it into from 25 yards away, and he couldn't have walked over and handed the ball to Dalton in any better spot. Because left or right, 6 inches either way, either Kalen makes the knockdown, Sting gets the knockdown, but he stuck it right in between them where neither one of them could get their hands on it. Dalton had to catch it. I was like, that's seven. Like, that's what we've been seeing. But I think probably the biggest and positive thing is the fact that I thought the pass protection really improved. And Mark likes to say this term, aggressive counseling. You know, Cole Popovich has done some aggressive counseling with that group after some
periods.
Yeah,
he's fun to watch.
Yeah. He doesn't hold back. And I love him. He is a true – you know, he played offensive line at Fresno State. I know if you go in the Wayback Machine, one of the great games of college history is 2005 against USC when Reggie Bush had like 515 yards or whatever it was.
Yeah.
A total offense that night. Cole was an offensive lineman at Fresno State team. And what a lot of people don't remember is in that game, Fresno State takes the lead.
Yeah.
After Reggie fumbled the ball. And then on the next drive, Reggie has the famous, you know, put the ball behind his back, basically the guy fly by and then running for a touchdown.
Yep.
That changed everything. But Cole was an offensive lineman on Fresno State's team at that time. And so he's got a lot of experience in this thing. He knows. He just has, I think, the right demeanor. But he's a really good teacher. You watch him after every play. There's somebody he's talking to on every play.
Yeah.
And I think that can be good. But I think he also has the offensive lineman's mentality, which is – you got to know when to leave the guys alone. You know, you blow a block. Like, sometimes this is best. Leave the guy. Let it marinate a little bit. Don't mention it. Go to the other guys.
Yeah.
Come back to it later. But I think the offensive line has protected much better. The backs and tight ends have done a better job of protecting. Even Dalton, it was on Monday.
Well,
he was against Daryl Taylor, who's been fantastic.
Yeah.
And he went one-on-one against Taylor and kept him out of there and let CJ make a throw. So, I feel like that's improved now.
It's been better. It's definitely been better than it was this time last year.
Sure.
This time last year, CJ was dog cussing people. Remember that?
Couldn't get it off.
Remember that? And that was when they went in with, this is our offensive line. Like, they had guys in ink.
That's right.
And this has been, it looks like it's starting to, the combinations are starting to come together a little bit, but it's still a very competitive situation for sure.
What's interesting, Sean, I think, you know, I've heard Seth say this a few times. And he's right in that the starting offensive line was set in stone, like day one last year.
Yeah.
The problem with that ultimately is the fact that it had to be set in stone because there wasn't enough talent on the second group to really push them for spots.
Yep.
So it was like, yeah, it was set in stone, and those guys knew it because the guys behind them weren't going to really push for opportunities. So you're kind of stuck with what you had.
Just cut to the chase.
Yeah. You're just like, all right, let's go with it. But I think one of the things, I love Laramie. I love Laramie as a dude. I didn't love his approach. And Laramie's approach was, well, I'll get ready when I'm ready.
Dude, I was thinking of this yesterday when there was the video that surfaced of all the offensive linemen doing push-ups after practice.
Yeah.
Well, would Laramie have been here for push-ups? Or he'd have been way over there, probably.
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, how could you find cohesion? Because Laramie was going to get ready when Laramie got ready. And my point in that is, well, Laramie didn't show up till like, week 3 of the preseason.
Yeah.
And look, it got Blake some good reps last year, left and right. But you got no cohesion through the toughest part of practice, which was the pads. Once you get to the third week of the training camp, you didn't have pads on all that much, so you weren't working things or seeing game speed like you wanted to. You knew Laramie was going to be able to handle it, but he had to work with the guys next to him, and that was gone for 3 weeks.
Well,
you're not having that now.
And I don't think that Laramie's approach is in one vacuum, and him getting all those false starts, especially early in the year, is in a separate vacuum.
Yeah,
those things are intertwined with one another.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's, you know, The false start, I was up, we were up the combine, with Paul Allen, the Vikings team, we were doing a podcast.
He's their play-by-play guy.
And so before we got started, they were asking me, hey, what was your experience with Stephon Diggs? And so I said, you know, it was good. I was like, we felt like we really needed Steph last year. Like, he was really, and you talk to people around the building, they'll tell you the same thing. They'll be like, you know what? We really needed him. He gave us, you know, the offensive kick in the ass. And so I told him a story about being in Minnesota about how at halftime at Minnesota, it's a long walk. And then once you even get on the other side of the, you know, the doorway, you got a long walk down the corridor to the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd finish up my D'Amico interview, and I can hear a voice just giving it to somebody. I'm like, what? And so I kind of stopped, and I was like, all right, I'll kind of be a fly on the wall for this one. I turn around, and Diggs is laying into Laramie, like laying into him.
Well, that was a game where he had the three false starts.
Well, it was funny because I had forgotten about that.
Yeah.
And Pete Bursich.
Yeah, yeah.
Buddy, that's who I was talking to. Yeah, that's who I was talking to. I was like, Pete, and I told him the story, and he goes, let me guess, Laramie Tunsil, all the false starts. I was like, how'd you know? Oh, yeah, all the false starts. Yeah, that was the game he had. So, yeah, and it's, you know, it's week three. You're on the road in a tough environment, and you have no cohesion. And, look, I'm not sitting here going to tell you that the offensive line is going to be, you know, the Dallas Cowboys unit of the 90s and that kind of thing. But there is improvement in the overall unit and the cohesiveness of the unit. And I think that's, to me, what has to happen.
Yeah, well, there's way more of a five fingers in the glove thing going on. It feels like, you know, that with this, there will be with this group whenever they set and determine who the five are going to be.
Yep.
All right, so ESPN.com, Johnny Harris is out with me here today live at Texans training camp. And then we'll pass the baton at 8 a.m. to him and Mark Vandermeer. So ESPN does this. I feel like you enjoy this exercise that ESPN does because it does correlate to the draft in some ways and how well you've – you are the preeminent draft guru that I know. You're my go-to. FootballTakeover.com, by the way.
Thank you.
But the Texans for the second straight year finished first in this exercise where they have the best, according to ESPN, the best young core – in football of guys under the age of 25 as of September 1st of this year. That's the cutoff date.
Right.
Under 25 right now. And it's sort of a combination of subjective and some empirical stuff here. I mean, it's a lot. The criteria, I mean, there's 8 bullet points of this criteria.
Yeah.
Just know that the big ones are age, quality of play. It feels like they weight things. If you've got a quarterback that's under the age of 25, that really, really helps.
Yep.
But the bottom line is this. For the second straight year, the Texans are number one in this exercise. And, look, it is being largely fueled by C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson Jr., which is awesome because I feel like when the Texans drafted C.J. and traded up to get Will, I don't think they sat down and said, man, we're going to be number one in the ESPN under 25 rankings. But I do feel like that this is a byproduct of what they were you know, what the plan was that day. They group them into blue chip players, and the blue chip players that they have for the Texans are C.J. Stroud, Will Anderson, who, by the way, are both 23.
Yeah.
Texans are probably going to be number one on this list again next year.
Right.
Derek Stingley Jr. will age off of the list this year, but he's there. He's 24 years old. Kamari Lassiter is 22. Those are the four guys they have as the blue chip players. But, man, they go on to – you know, Kalen Bullock is a guy who got a ton of love in that other exercise ESPN did with all the anonymous GMs and coaches and scouts. Henry Toa has been real solid, 24 years old. By the way, Kalen is 22. And then the rookie class they mentioned, these guys have all done well so far early in camp. Ariante Ursery is 23. The two wide receivers from Iowa State, Higgins and Knoll, are 22. Jalen Smith has had a bunch of pass breakups out here.
Yeah, J-Rock's been good, man.
He's been good out
really
here.
Good.
He's 21 years old. So this, honestly, Johnny, and this is me getting greedy, like imagine if they hit – on just one of the offensive linemen that they've taken over the last, like if they Kenyon's 24 still, and Blake Fisher I think is 22. Juice aged off of this list, but if they, my God, I mean this is it's incredible to begin with, but holy crap that there was still some meat on the bone that could have gotten them, you know, even more separation. This is a testament, I think, to the plan of attack they had on day one of 2023. And obviously Stingley factors into that as well the year before. But now that they've sort of kind of, I don't want to say mastered because we've still got a lot of runway with these young players, but early on here it looks like the approach of getting out of the first round and sort of accumulating stuff in day two to supplement these elite guys that you have, you know, it's early, but, you know, so far so good.
It's interesting when you think back to that 23 draft I mean, you and I talked about this a lot. I felt like that 23 draft was a four elite player draft.
Mm-hmm.
It was the two quarterbacks, Bryce and CJ. It was Jalen Carter, who obviously with some of the off-field incidents, I didn't think he was going to be in the crosshairs. And then it was Will Anderson Jr. And I would sit down. I sat down that entire spring, and I was like, how do we get two of them? Because we got the assets, man. We got assets to go get two of them. And I remember when the trade happened, and I would be asked by national people or asked by, you know, people from other municipalities, and he gave up a lot. I'm like, look, we didn't – at that time, we didn't have elite players. Like, whose jersey did you go buy? You know, you're buying Stings on spec.
Yeah.
Because it's cool number 24, which I love. And you hope that Sting was going to be good, but even at that point, Sting missed the last half of that year. So, whose jersey were you going to buy, i.e., where were your elite players? Nico hadn't become Nico yet. And so, yeah, okay, you drafted Stroud. Great. There's going to be a lot of seven jerseys, you know, built, but you still needed elite players. But you also needed an elite alpha. And that's why I felt like the trade for Will Anderson was more than just trading for defensive end Will Anderson. You were trading for the whole package. And I thought because of that, it made a lot of sense. You get an elite player that is going to be an elite locker room guy eventually. He is going to be the face of your franchise, especially on the defensive side. Mm-hmm. And he's going to set a tone that if what I saw at Alabama, what I heard about him at Alabama, that if that carried forward, which there was no reason why it wouldn't,
right?
Okay, you were adding elite players to the mix. What Nick has mastered since is, well, we're going to use our first-round pick. We're going to move down in Minnesota, but then use that pick to go get Diggs. Now, Diggs' injury kind of curtailed.
I would do it again. I'd do it again.
Right, because in the second round, you go get Kamari Lassiter.
Correct.
And this year in the second round, you get Jaden Higgins. And because you trade down from 25 to 34, you get Higgins and more capital. You get Higgins and the opportunity to trade up to get Woody Marks, who, by the way, I think Woody is going to be – I mean, you know how I felt. I reacted with you on the show.
I was five feet away
from
you. You went nuts.
But I'm watching him here, and I'm seeing what he's doing, and I'm like, this is the guy. And I know there's a lot of conjecture about Joe Mixon, and I was on the way up here, I was getting caught up on Reggie and John from yesterday. They were talking about that. Figgy had a camp question that I thought was interesting. Well, hey, if Joe can't go, like he goes on early season IR, you know, is prime Nick Chubb enough to keep Joe as kind of the 1B or what? And I thought it was a really good question, but I didn't really mention the other two guys who I think have been as good as you could possibly be.
For sure.
In Juwan Jordan and Woody Marks.
Yep.
So because Nick maneuvered the board the way that he did and you know, when you're drafting down at this part of the board, which hopefully we're going to do that for a long time, those trades into the second round only piss off the people that had set up the draft party. My girl Disney Harris, man, she's probably like, God dang, Nick, I set this draft party up and then you trade out of it. You know, Larry and Stafford screaming, we didn't draft anybody at the draft, you know. And I'm like, look, man, we're going to get a good player tomorrow. And guess who it turns out to be? Jaden freaking Higgins.
Yeah.
And draft capital that you can then move down and go move back up at some point and get Woody Marks
or
whoever they drafted. They trade up to get Ursary. So that to me is where the genius is now. Like, you bet Nick better, and he knows this, Nick better get Stroud and Will Anderson right. He better get them right.
Yeah.
When you get into the second round, it's a little dicier.
It's dicier, for sure.
But do you look at Kamari Lassiter and you go, yeah, that one.
Well, and I think they've gotten really good, especially once D'Amico got in the building, of evaluating their type of guys, too.
That's exactly right. And they said it to me at the combine. I thought it was interesting. D'Amico said that. He said once the season was over and he started jumping into draft prep, he said when he would pick up the initial reports from the scouts, it started saying, not a D'Amico guy, not a Swarm guy, totally our guy. Guy D'Amico would love. Like, those things ended up in the scouting reports, which I thought was fabulous, because now, as Sheldon said 2 days ago, now the culture is set.
The machine is working now.
Now everybody knows what D'Amico and Nick look for.
Yep.
The players know the standard of what's expected of them.
Yep.
And I'm talking all levels. Like special teams, I know people, when it gets to special teams, you know, everybody gets on their phone, the media gets on their phone. I want you to pay attention an hour and 45 minutes into practice, and I want you to watch Frank Ross's dudes that have just gone through O&D, and they're flying down the field in 95-degree heat like it's the last rep they'll ever have in their life.
Yeah.
You're like, that's the standard that they have set. Now, the standard has to be winning that divisional playoff round.
Sure, yeah, of course.
But they're at least piling on the pieces to be able to do that. So them being number one, it's not really, you know, not too surprising. Like you said, they listed the blue chippers. They didn't put Kalen there.
No.
You know, Henry was the leading tackler last year.
Yeah.
You know, a guy who I'd like to see on that list, and if he's healthy, he could be on that list, is C. Harris, 48. I mean, he could definitely be on that list, but he's got to be healthy to be on it. And I think one of Kate Stover, Jalen Smith, Woody Marks, kind of a third or fourth rounder of the last couple years, is going to be a guy that kind of bursts out this year. I mean, you know, Cade's been my breakout guy, but watching Jalen Smith this year and watching Woody Marks, the two USC guys, man, they've been really impressive thus far.
I think the other interesting thing, the other interesting thing about this exercise that ESPN did, and John Harris is in for Seth, and we're talking about this ESPN ranking of the under 25 years old cores of all 32 NFL teams. The interesting thing about this is, might the AFC South be on the cusp of a bit of a renaissance here? Because Texans are first, eighth on the list, the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah.
We'll see what the magnificent Gladstone ends up doing to either hurt or help that. Mm-hmm. Number nine is the Tennessee Titans. And obviously, they drafted a quarterback with the number one overall pick. That helps.
Yeah.
I'm assuming. I'm not reading their paragraphs here in this article right now. Indianapolis is 20th, which is, you know, that can go either way. You know, them missing on Anthony Richardson, or at least looking like they've missed on Anthony Richardson, certainly hurts them. But if I did the exercise where you add up the rankings of all the teams by division, you know, so the higher the number, the worse the under 25 cores are. And the AFC South and the NFC East are tied in a runaway right now with 38 total points. They have the least amount of points, which is means you're the best in this exercise. Right. How are you feeling about the division right now? Just in terms, is that rating of the young cores of the other teams in the division? Do you think that's indicative of the direction this division is going, or do you feel like this is still, because there's a big gap in my opinion right now between the Texans and these other three teams?
It is, and I think it's all dependent on two players, and that's Trevor Lawrence and Anthony Richardson. I think Cam's gonna be good. Tennessee, they gotta let him cook a little bit. You know, he's the type of quarterback where you got to let him cook. You can't put the reins on him all the time. Like, he's a creator, and he's going to make a mistake when he creates every now and again. But he's also going to make four or five plays that other quarterbacks in this league can't make. And I think he's going to give them kind of a lift in Tennessee. So I anticipate him, and not just because he's number one overall pick. The way he plays, the confidence he has. I think he's going to be the right fit in Tennessee. But really, it comes down to Trevor Lawrence and Anthony Richardson. Because, like you mentioned, Jacksonville, you know, if Travis Hunter is all that on both sides of the ball, Tyson Campbell apparently has been having a really good camp thus far. BTJ has been unbelievable. I don't mind them having good receivers, because I feel like our corners can match up. It was like when teams had, you know, good pass rushers, it didn't matter because we had Laramie. Not a little different. We'll see how I handle it. But now when we face teams that have got really good receivers, it's like, all right, well, Sting's got number one.
No kidding.
And Kamari's got the other guy, so we're okay. So, yeah, I think this is where it's going. You know, the Colts, you know, drafted all these good receivers, young receivers. You know, Adonai Mitchell, Josh Downs.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, Josh Downs' brother is Caleb Downs, is at Ohio State.
Oh, yeah, the safety,
Holy
right?
crap.
Yeah.
If you eventually, you know, I don't know where this goes with the Texans, and I don't know, you know, what the extension might be if they give one to C.J. Gardner-Johnson, sticks around, but – man, if Caleb Downs came here and played next to Kalen Ballock, there wouldn't be an interception or a turnover they couldn't get. But either way, the Colts have a great wide receiving core. Now you had Tyler Warren to it, but you got scattershot Anthony Richardson.
Yeah.
It was interesting reading some of the Indianapolis stuff. Like, oh, Anthony Richardson, the last couple days, man, he started to, you know, there's a lot of hope. And there's a lot of, look what he can do.
Have we heard that before out of there?
Absolutely.
Okay, gotcha. I just double-checking to make sure.
Yeah. Now, Trevor's the one. Trevor should be a lot better than he is. And, you know, look, can you blame it on Urban Meyer the first year? Sure. Doug the last couple years? I don't know. I'm not sure about that. I mean, the game against us here in week 4 last year, he had 4, maybe 5 opportunities to put knives right in us.
Yeah.
Just take us down.
Yep.
And he blew it.
Couldn't do it.
He just absolutely could not hit open receivers. Now, some of that was a pass rush. I'll give give that. But we did not cover well that game, and he had all kinds of – and he missed, just flat out missed them. And then he's banged up. And then, of course, you know, what happened in Jacksonville happened in Jacksonville. But he's that guy for them. If Leon Cohen can kind of Baker Mayfield him, then okay, oh boy. Now it gets really interesting. Because that level of talent at Jacksonville, you know, Trent Baalke took a lot of crap, and deservedly so. But he put together some really good pieces.
Yeah.
But those pieces never got cohesive more than that one run at the end of 22.
Well, the pieces are what get them to eighth on this list. It's nothing Gladstone's done. I mean, it's the pieces that Baalke took.
Yeah.
And it's that's the, this exercise isn't about the chemistry of all the things. It's about just the sum total of the value of the parts.
And,
you know?
And therein lies why I'd be excited as an AFC South fan and the Texans being the AFC South. But I think the difference with where the Texans are and the others are – they're pieces that have come together and done things. And the others are just athletic pieces that, you don't really know. How did Travis Hunter and Brian Thomas Jr. work together? How does that work?
Yep.
You know, is Travis Hunter all that? Is he able to play both ways like he thinks he can?
I want to ask you about Travis Hunter because you watched every snap of him, I'm sure, at Colorado. And he's, you know, they're really giving it a go of him playing both ways. I've seen some tweets with the snap counts out of practice, and It's funny, on 11-on-11, it's skewed more towards defense, or at least as of 2 days ago it was. I don't know if that's balanced itself out or anything. He's clearly doing stuff on both sides of the ball at camp. Neither is a novelty. Like, he is working on both sides. If you had to guess, how long does that last and what side of the ball? If he winds up on one side of the ball way more than the other, which side do you think it is, and which side would it be if you were Liam Cohen?
I would lean defensively. Because I always feel like you can find – I mean, there's so many receivers you can find.
Yep.
But I don't know that you can find a corner that's got his smarts, his ball skills. There are very few. I mean, we've got the best one in the league right here, so you see the best. But Sting's built different. Like, he's built different.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's thick. So he's really
he's
good.
He's, like, literally built. Not one of these, like the psychology built different.
Right.
He's just, like, a different – he's out of a different lab than other guys.
So if you're game planning – if you're game planning against the Jaguars, you know, one of the things, I've heard coaches mention this phrase. They're like, hey, have the littles come up and make plays. And the littles meaning the DBs. I'd run at that sucker all day. I'd force him to have to come up and run support all day.
That's messed
because
up,
because it is – it's not me. I just repeated what
I know. Yeah.
Like, make the littles make plays. And so make Travis Hunter come up and tackle – 10 times in the first half.
Right.
Run at him. Run outside zone. You'll put a lead blocker on. Make him feel the game. Make him feel the presence such that, A, we can't put him in an offense this series. He's gassed. He's made 3 tackles on his drive.
Yeah.
He can't go in an offense. So that, to me, is what you really have to get to with him.
Yeah.
Because when he talked about the whole Otani thing, it's like, come on, man. You know, Otani's got to do it both ways. But the one thing he missed and didn't say is playing both sides is going to end up being physical. So is he going to go out receiver and not block?
Yeah. No. The Otani thing is only a comparison because they both go both ways in their respective sport.
Right.
There's not nearly the – there's no physical toll for Otani.
Right. Exactly. So he's going to – so there. So there's 65 –
not no physical toll, but like no blunt force
trauma. Right.
Yeah.
So there's – there are no collisions. So, there's 65 plays on each side. It's 130 plays.
Yeah.
So you run the ball. I mean, I would run wherever he was all the time.
Yep.
I mean, I would run at him. I would hit him with wide receiver 1 and 2 in the blocking. I mean, I would just run right at him all game long. Like, come on and tackle. Because he's pretty in tune and he's not scared.
Yeah.
He's not going to back off physically. But that might ultimately be what takes him down. Because you think of the great players in this league that play one side of the ball, invariably they miss 2-3 games when they're playing at that level. And plus, when he goes and catches a ball, he's not going to be able to run away from a Big 12 defense. He's going to catch a ball and get blasted by Petrie. He's going to end up catching a ball, you know, and take a shot from Kenny Moore from the Colts.
Yep.
You know, he's going to take those hits, and they're going to accumulate. So that's why I think being smart with him early is going to be kind of the wise way to go. Like, all right, they're going to have to kind of pick stretches of when they can – all right, this might be a 100-play game. Yo, man, this might only be an 80-play game. They're going to probably have to pick and choose. I love them giving it a shot. I really do. Just as a football fan, I love it. I love a unique player like that. I love guys that can go both ways. I would love to see Sting try it because he's got great hands, but it's unique for a reason.
Yeah. The first five games of this season are so interesting.
So interesting.
You know, the opener with the Rams, a real test for this offensive line. The Monday night opener, which a primetime opener, home opener for the second year in a row against Tampa is, you know, that might have been the most exciting game of the D'Amico Ryans era so far was that game 2 years ago in week mm-hmm. 9. And then the two division games against the two opponents that actually have something new and interesting going on with Travis Hunter in week 3 and then Cam Ward in week 4. And then obviously you go try to take down the Beast in week 5 going into the bye week.
You look at it, and I know a lot of fans will say, and you know, you look at it and think, well, if we beat the Rams and Bucks, man, we'd be 4-0. Well, hell, Tennessee beat you here last year because you didn't take care of your business.
Yeah.
And you just were sloppy and tired and exhausted, basically. That was 12 of 13 in a row. So it's not surprising, but, man, going out to L.A. and beating them, you know, we haven't played
those
so far.
Those are two playoff teams you're starting.
Exactly. And, yeah, I mean, really, really good quarterbacks you got to face. Davante Adams with the Rams. I think the Bucs are one of the more underrated teams in the league.
Yep.
But I think if the offense can get it going, I think they can run the ball at least against the Rams. And I think, and I said this after we practiced against the Rams, I said, man, teams are going to put a number on them up on the board if they can get the ball off.
Right.
The Vikings in the playoff game could get the ball off and they end up scoring 9 points. If you get the ball off against the Rams, you got an opportunity to put up a big number. Now, running against Big Vita Vea in week 2 is going to be a challenge. But if they can just get some semblance of a running game by then play action is a monster. And I don't think the Bucs cover guys can stay with a healthy group of Texas receivers. I just don't think it'd happen. But to win both those games, look, you know it. You had a 2-win parlay on those first two. I mean, that's a pretty decent number to beat those two to start the year.
They're about a field goal. I've seen 3.5 underdog to the Rams.
Yeah, it makes sense.
That Bucs game is hovered around a pick 'em.
Exactly.
The Bucs are viewed a pick 'em at NRG Stadium, which means that on some people's power rankings. The Bucs are viewed as a superior team right now.
Yeah,
you know. So those are two tough ones right out of the. You've got two quarterbacks that can, you know, that you might end up getting into a shootout with.
And I know every team is different, and I know it's been a couple years, but thankfully D'Amico has faced Matt Stafford before. He's faced the McVay offense before. That helps.
Yeah,
and the Bucs are Liam Cohen-less. So they've got a new offensive coordinator that they're integrating. Now, the Bucs are facing, obviously, a new offensive coordinator here. But those two right out of the chute, it's going to be really interesting. Now, Stafford's dealing with some back stuff. I kind of hope he continues to.
I would rest till week 2 if I
Yeah,
were
yeah,
him.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be my advice.
Jimmy G. Come on, bring Jimmy G.
Oh, that's right. That's who.
Let's get Jimmy Garoppolo.
Can I tell you, I didn't realize Trey Lance is on the Chargers.
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday, I got to get back up to speed on my backup quarterback.
That happens tomorrow night.
Yeah, Hall of Fame
We
game,
got football
baby.
Tomorrow night. Man,
I know.
It's amazing to think about. That was us last year, and I remember being up there. And one of our great moments, Aaron Raybould, our engineer, and Robert Hensley, who produces On the Road, three of us, went over early that Thursday. We had never been to the Hall of Fame, so we go through the Hall of Fame. We go in the bust room, and I got pictures of all the Packers I was sending my dad. And then we get to the end, and there's the guys going in, and the way they had set it up, it was perfect symmetry.
So they had the busts of the guys that were
they
going
didn't
in?
Have them. They had the little platforms.
The space for the platform.
Yeah,
I got you.
So right in the middle is Andres.
Yeah,
and it was just like, oh, this is cool. I'm telling you, we don't walk out the door. And Andre's walking in, and it was like, this is so cool, man. We just saw where your bus is going. I've never seen the real thing.
That's so cool.
It was, I mean, other than the rain at the end, it was such a great weekend.
Yeah.
But it was so early, man. That team last year did not need to start that early.
No, dude.
It was a long marathon.
I was with CJ doing an event the day that the Hall of Fame game got announced, like in late March.
Yeah.
And we were doing an event. We were in the green room together. It was like a fireside chat kind of thing. We were in the green room together. And And I'm like, how you doing, man? He's like, I'm doing all right, but I just found out my summer vacation got short by a week.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was done. He was saying it.
He wasn't alone, man.
Yeah, no,
he wasn't alone.
No.
It was all of us like, no. It's July 16th. We got to go to practice?
It was.
What?
It was. I mean, we were literally, it just got announced like 45 minutes before that. It was really funny.
Yeah.
To CJ's credit, he put a happy face on during the event that we did.
Here's the question. Would you rather have gone to the Hall of Fame game? Well, now that I look back on it, maybe I know the answer to this. Would you rather have gone to the Hall of Fame game or play the Vikings in Tottenham? I think I may have rather in Tottenham. I don't know. Kind of looking at it that way, like, hey, you know, we'll go to the Hall of Fame game, but you take us out of London. Because we were told by the Vikings people at the Combine that year, oh, we'll see you in London. We'll see you in London.
That's what I had heard, yeah.
And then
something happened.
Nope.
Something happened.
And then we got the Hall of Fame game. I don't know. It's crazy how that works.
Hey, okay, two things for the final segment here. One, you had Andre on Texans All Access week. Okay, so I want to play a funny clip from Andre, long as we're talking about him.
Okay.
I have an either-or that I feel like is right up your alley.
Okay. All right.
And it's about the first five games of the Texans season.
Oh, okay.
Either-or for John Harris. Right, this is a game we used to play all the time,
all time,
you and me.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to do that in the final segment coming up next, and then we'll hand it over to Johnny and Mark at the top of the hour. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast live from Texans training camp.